Greetings, this is Dan White with the media book, The End Time Church, From the Cathedrals to the Catacombs, Chapter 22, Rabbi, Rabbi. Why is it that the most learned people work in some of the most ungodly places in society, like the advanced universities? Even among Christian institutions, the most progressive are the farthest from the Bible. Why? Because academics, even those who claim to follow Christ, are most likely to follow their own reasoning. You see, they're smart, and they know some stuff. Since they're so smart and learned, their natural mind and spirit prevails instead of God's spirit, and they often follow their own human reason to the darkness of ungodliness. I once asked a man from New England how that section of the country went from the Puritans and the Mathers to Harvard and the Obamas. The Plymouth settlement was established only because the Pilgrims wanted to worship God as they thought best. They risked their lives to get there. Half of them died once they got there. But when there, they established a society where they could follow God as they thought best. Today, Massachusetts and the whole of New England are epicenters of the Antichrist movement in America. How did this come to be? I asked the New Englander. Because, he said, New England is the location of the premier universities in America. That is, the New England area is more reliant on the human reason of some of the most intelligent humans in the population. When human reason wanders off on its own, it is left with a maze of never-ending complexity, confusion, carnality, and conceit. This is true whether or not the study is on science, which explicitly omits God, or even on the Bible itself, which explicitly includes God. Antichrist scientists base their science on Darwin's claim that life began in a little warm pond. And they claim to base their science on observation, yet no one has ever observed life spontaneously generating in a little warm pond. Thus, the smartest minds in the world wind up contradicting themselves in their carnal conceit. Amazingly, when human minds focus on the teachings of God, they often wind up in the same maze of confusion and contradiction. And this amazing maze is called theology, the internal revenue tax code of religion. Just because a person studies God does not mean that he loves God, understands God, or thinks like God. Just because a person has a religious position or title does not mean that he is a selfless servant of God. In fact, he may be mainly self-serving, and the position and title simply help him do that. Like the title of rabbi. God did not set up the rabbis. God did set up the priesthood in the Bible. The Torah, the book of the law, has detailed instructions for priests, including their positions, garments, and functions. Two sons of Aaron were incinerated for ignoring those details and exalting themselves in their position. Centuries later, the priesthood again became defiled, but without that immediate retribution, although retribution and removal did come. So God definitely set up the priesthood, but God did not set up the rabbis. There are no instructions in the Bible for setting up a rabbinate. What, then, is a rabbi? The Jewish Encyclopedia says that rabbi is, quote, a Hebrew term used as a title for those who are distinguished for learning, who are the authoritative teachers of the law, and who are the appointed spiritual heads of the community. It is derived from a noun in biblical Hebrew that means great or distinguished. And in post-biblical Hebrew, means master, in opposition to slave or pupil. In the Palestinian schools, the sages were addressed as Rabbi, my master. This term of respectful address gradually came to be used as a title, end quote, in the Jewish Encyclopedia. So Rabbi means great, distinguished, or master. Specifically, my master. Well, that's mindful of Octavian's title, the August One. Continuing from the Jewish Encyclopedia, the more ancient generations, however, which were far superior, had no such titles as Rabbi, Rabbi, or Rab for either the Babylonian or Palestinian sages. This is evident from the fact that Hillel I, who came from Babylon, had not the title Rabban prefixed to his name. Of the prophets also who were very eminent, it is simply said, Haggai the prophet, etc. Ezra did not come up from Babylon, etc. The title Rabban not being used. Indeed, this title is not met with earlier than the time of the Patriarchate. It was first used of Rabban Gamaliel the Elder, Rabban Simeon his son, and Rabban Yohanan ben Zakkai, all of whom were patriarchs or presidents of the Sanhedrin, end quote. So the prophets did not have exalting titles. They had names, like Haggai or Ezra, not Rabbi Haggai or Rabbi Ezra. Since they had names, they didn't need titles. The purpose of a name is to point out who someone is. The purpose of a title is to exalt someone above others. The prophets who were close to God did not seek titles to be exalted in the eyes of people. They were just Haggai or Ezra. Human nature being what it is, eventually, the practice evolved of giving Bible teachers an exalting title, and one title of exaltation was Rabbi. The meaning of that title was my master, as in a spiritual master. Later, the title was interpreted to mean teacher, but still as an exalted spiritual teacher. And when that happened, those who were so exalted did not humble themselves and refuse the title. And those who were demeaned, you know, if someone is exalted, then always others must be lowered. Those who were demeaned went along with the exaltations. Both those who are exalted and those who do the exalting are wrong. Notice how particular God is about not exalting anyone but Him. Exodus 20, verse 3, you shall have no other gods before me, the first commandment. The word translated as gods is Elohim and used for the one true God, but also used for angels or God's messengers, for idols, or for men in positions of power. Kyle DeLitch's commentary on the Old Testament discusses the Hebrew in this passage. Let there not be to thee, thou shalt have no other gods. Literally, beyond me, or in addition to me, by the side of me. Before me, as the Vulgate has, is incorrect. Also against me, in opposition to me. End quote. So that commentary says the commandment means beyond me, or in addition to me, or by the side of me. So the very first commandment does more than just say, you shall have no other gods before Yahweh. In reality, of course, there are no other gods. This commandment forbids following any powerful beings in addition to or by the side of Yahweh God. Consequently, when John bowed down before an angel of God, that messenger gave him the message to get up. Revelation 22, now I, John, am the one who heard and saw these things. When I heard and saw, I fell down to worship before the feet of the angel who had shown me these things. He said to me, see, you don't do it. I am a fellow bondservant with you and with your brothers, the prophets, and with those who keep the words of this book. Worship God. End quote. And Peter told Cornelius in Acts 10 the same thing. Get up. Acts 10, on the next day they entered into Caesarea. Cornelius was waiting for them, having called together his relatives and near friends. When Peter entered, Cornelius met him, fell down at his feet, and worshipped him. But Peter raised him up, saying, stand up! I myself am also a man. Then Paul and Barnabas nearly jumped out of their clothes when they were called Mercury and Jupiter. Acts 14, when the multitude saw what Paul had done, they lifted up their voice, saying in the language of Lyconia, the gods have come down to us in the likeness of men. They called Barnabas Jupiter and Paul Mercury, because he was the chief speaker. The priest of Jupiter, whose temple was in front of their city, brought oxen and garlands to the gate, and would have made a sacrifice along with the multitudes. But when the apostles, Barnabas and Paul, heard of it, they tore off their clothes and sprang into the multitude, crying out, men, why are you doing these things? We also are men of like passions with you, and bring you good news that you should turn from these vain things to the living God, who made the sky, earth, sea, and all that is in them, who in the generations gone by allowed all the nations to walk in their own ways, yet he didn't leave himself without witness, in that he did good, and gave you rains from the sky and fruitful seasons, filling our hearts with food and gladness. But even saying these things, Paul and Barnabas hardly stopped the multitudes from making a sacrifice to them. End quote. But they did stop them. In all these examples, none but God is exalted. Any exaltation shown to people, or even to angels, is instantly refused and stoutly stopped. So it should be with exalting titles. A religious title has no purpose other than the exaltation of the one so titled, and that human exaltation is just as wrong as offering a sacrifice to a person. The very essence of our human nature is to exalt ourselves. Over and over, the Bible shows that we are not to seek to be exalted in this life. The great problem with all people is self-exaltation, love of self, me. Anything that contributes to that weakness, like exalting positions and titles, is bad. Hezekiah, obedient as he was, slipped on the slope of self-exaltation. 2 Chronicles 32, verse 31, however, concerning the ambassadors of the princes of Babylon, who sent to him to inquire of the wonder that was done in the land, God left Hezekiah to try him, that he might know all that was in his heart. Then in Isaiah 39, at that time Merodach-Baladan, the son of Baladan, king of Babylon, sent letters and a present to Hezekiah, for he heard that he had been sick and had recovered. Hezekiah was pleased with him and showed them his house of his precious things, the silver and gold, spices, precious oil, all the house of his armor, all that was found in his treasures. There was nothing in his house nor in all his dominion that Hezekiah didn't show them. Then Isaiah the prophet came to King Hezekiah and asked him, what do these men say? Where did they come from to you? Hezekiah said, they have come from a country far from me, even from Babylon. Then he asked, "What have they seen in your house?" Hezekiah answered, "They have seen all that is in my house. There is nothing among my treasures that I have not shown them." Then Isaiah said to Hezekiah, "Hear the word of Yahweh of hosts. Behold, the days are coming when all that is in your house and that which your fathers have stored up until today will be carried to Babylon. Nothing will be left," says Yahweh. And King Uzziah was weakest when he was strongest. 2 Chronicles 26, "But when Uzziah was strong, his heart was lifted up so that he did corruptly, and he trespassed against Yahweh his God, for he went into Yahweh's temple to burn incense on the altar of incense. Azariah the priest went in after him, and with him 80 priests of Yahweh, who were valiant men. They resisted Uzziah the king and said to him, 'It isn't for you, Uzziah, to burn incense to Yahweh, but for the priests, the sons of Aaron, who were consecrated to burn incense. Go out of the sanctuary, for you have trespassed. It will not be for your honor from Yahweh God.' Then Uzziah was angry. He had a censer in his hand to burn incense, and while he was angry with the priests, the leprosy broke out on his forehead before the priests in Yahweh's house beside the altar of incense. Azariah the chief priest and all the priests looked at him, and behold, he was leprous in his forehead. And they thrust him out quickly from there. Yes, he also himself hurried to go out, because Yahweh had struck him. Uzziah the king was a leper to the day of his death, and lived in a separate house being a leper, for he was cut off from Yahweh's house. Jotham his son was over the king's house, judging the people of the land inward." And the Apostle Paul was strongest, and he was weakest. 2 Corinthians 12, "By reason of the exceeding greatness of the revelations, that I should not be exalted excessively, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me, that I should not be exalted excessively. Concerning this thing, I begged the Lord 3 times that it might depart from me. He has said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness.' Most gladly, therefore, I will glory in my weaknesses," Paul said, "that the power of Christ may rest on me. Therefore, I take pleasure in weaknesses, in injuries, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong in glory." Our human nature is so deceitful that even when we're trying to follow God, we can still exalt ourselves doing it. And nothing shows that more than exalting religious titles. And that's why Yeshua specifically forbid exalting religious titles. Matthew 23, "But all their works they do to be seen of men," Christ said. "They make their phylacteries broad, enlarge the fringes of their garments, and love the place of honor at feasts, the best seats in the synagogues, the salutations in the marketplaces, and to be called Rabbi, Rabbi by men. But don't you be called Rabbi, for one is your teacher, the Christ of the Messiah, and all of you are brothers. Call no man on earth your father, for one is your Father, he who is in heaven. Neither be called masters, for one is your master, the Messiah. But he who is greatest among you will be your servant. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted." In glory. John Gill's Bible commentary on that passage pierces to the heart of the problem. Quote, "And greetings in the markets," Gill said, "they used to stroll, the rabbis, about the markets, being public places, where there was a great concourse of people, on purpose to be taken notice of before multitudes, with singular marks of respect, as stretching out the hand, uncovering the head, and bowing the knee, and to be called of men, Rabbi, Rabbi. Because of their great authority, and largeness of their knowledge, since it was usual in the salutations of them to double the word. Gill goes on, where you have the three different words used by our Lord in this and the following verses, by which these men love to be called and Christ inveighed against. Nay, they not only suggest that kings gave them these honorable titles, and they expected them from them, but even they like to be called kings themselves. End quote from John Gill. So Christ shows that such religious titles as Rabbi, Father, and Master are just for exaltation. First, exaltation over the brothers. Quote, but don't you be called Rabbi, for one is your teacher, the Christ, and all of you are brothers. Second, exaltation over God himself. Quote, Christ said, for one is your Father. And third, exaltation against Christ. Quote, for one is your Master, the Christ. This is the great problem with religious titles. These titles absolutely cannot be separated from the human desire to be exalted. Therefore, anyone who seeks to humble himself before God must avoid such exalting titles. If you have a name, use it. You don't need anything else. Then Christ ends his command against exalting titles with the motive of someone wanting a religious title. Quote, but he who is greatest among you will be your servant. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. End quote. Christ's followers should not seek to exalt themselves. The greatest of his servants will be servants. They will not wear clothing to distinguish themselves above others. They will not seek elevated positions of honor, and they will not be called by exalting religious titles. Now, the underlying assumption of those who would be called rabbi and other such exalting titles, the underlying assumption is that they will not be adversely affected by this act of exaltation, that they are so spiritual that they are above the very greatest temptation to the human spirit, which is to be exalted above others. That is the underlying assumption. Need we point out that such a position is itself extremely self-exalting? Religious titles, whatever they are, that seek to so exalt someone are wrong. There were no Christian or messianic rabbis. Paul was an apostle, but he was not Apostle Paul. He was just the Apostle Paul, because that's what he did. Even the innocuous title of Mr. can be used to distinguish and exalt one group above another. Christ forbade all these titles and any like them. They are the titles of religious rulers who seek to place themselves between people and God, and ultimately to put themselves in place of God. Rabbi, Rabbi. Furthermore, in all those people who were closest to God, from Abraham, the father of the faithful, to Moses, who spoke face to face with God, to Elijah, through whom God worked many miracles, in all those people who were closest to God, where are their exalting titles? If Abraham, father of the faithful, had no exalting title, should a mere descendant of Abraham have one? If Moses, through whom the law was given, did not have a title, should a teacher of that law have one? If Elijah, who called down fire from heaven and rain from a tiny cloud, if Elijah did not have a religious appellation, should one who only has matches and a water bucket be so effusively entitled? Surely not. Surely those who are closest to God and farthest from themselves will adamantly refuse such titles. And surely those who are closest to God will refuse to use such titles for mere people. God set up the priesthood with detailed instructions, but he did not set up the rabbis. The rabbis set themselves up as religious rulers, like little religious kings, with the help of the people, who bowed before them and addressed them with puffed-up titles. I questioned a messianic rabbi once about his exalting title, and he said that he agreed with me, but he objected that if he didn't have that title, then people wouldn't listen to him. Just as people like to set up political kings, so people like to set up religious kings. They think that religious folderol and lifted up leaders helps them serve an invisible God. In truth, religious folderol always helps hide the invisible God. Augustus, the Prince of Peace, ruled with the Pax Romana when the Prince of Peace came. Herod, the King of the Jews, prepared the temple for the King of the Jews. And all the rabbis, the little religious kings with their hoity-toity titles and special seats of honor, ultimately had to face the rabbi.